I was going to ask about that. Parks employees in the past, I don't know, say prior to 1990, wouldn't have had access to environmental assessment and monitoring tools that are available to you today. What fundamental changes in knowledge have had the most effect on your work? I think you just kind of talked a bit about that.
Just having more resources available to us for environmental monitoring.
What kind of resources?
I guess greater will there just seems to be more emphasis on protection of our green spaces.
So more attitude change than a change in, say, tools?
Yeah, I think more attitude change.
Mm-hmm. Have you found changes in park users? I know the demographics of Burnaby are changing. Mm-hmm. Has that changed trail use or park use?
Not really. It seems that Burnaby Mountain Park has become more and more popular over the years. As we develop the trails, the word gets out that we've got this beautiful trail system. So I think over the last 10 years, we've seen a bigger shift from, we're getting more hikers than we used to. And the ratio between hikers and cyclists seems to be evening out. So we're almost getting a few more hikers than cyclists, it seems, even though the cycling component is extremely popular for Burnaby Mountain. It's just because it's this fantastic facility right in the city, and it could be part of the reason could be the shift in increased population at university. That's likely one of the contributors to seeing more hikers and walkers on the trails.
And what other park users have you seen?
I don't know what you mean.
How else would people be using the mountain? I guess just to, I don't know, how fine-grained would you monitor park use? Would you have like categories of bird watchers and
nature
appreciators?
We don't define it that finely.
Yes.
Mostly just nature lovers, like cyclists are nature lovers, and so are hikers and dog walkers. Everyone's basically there for the nature and this beautiful green space and nice trees. Mm. Yeah. One of the ways we've tried to enhance the awareness component is after we developed the Mountain Air Trail, we developed with the help of graphic artists and input from our foresters, we developed a big tree interpretive sign program. So on Mountain Air Trail, we have signs that highlight the large trees that we have on the mountain. So some of them would include Sitka spruce, Douglas fir, western red cedar, big leaf maple. So that's another environmental component that we've been able to enhance over the last couple of years. Something that we did on a recently constructed trail on Sidewinder Trail was we introduced another layer of environmental awareness. And we developed a sign program that focuses on the forest cycle, forest pioneers, some of the neat animals that we have living on the mountain, including the northern squirrel, the Pacific jumping mouse, the little brown bats, and also birds of prey. We highlighted some of the wildflowers that we would find on the mountain. Some of the ferns and lichens that we would see, and also the songbirds. So,
And those are beautiful signs, and so they would be put erected in the park then.
Yep. So we have examples of these signs on two of our trails. Most of them are. We have like a full complement on Sidewinder Trail, so it's interpretive. It's basically an interpretive walk on Sidewinder Trail, and then we also had some spare signs left over, so we put them on Jim's Jungle Trail.
Oh, that's a good name. Mm-hmm. Do you know how that name came about?
I think it was from a trail builder.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, where's mm-hmm. Jim's Jungle Trail? It's the
southernmost trail on the mountain. And it comes off of North Road, right where Stony Creek flows into the park.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I was actually just wondering then about access to the trails. Is that a problem at all with parking? How easy is it to access the trails?
Parking it always seems to be an issue with a lot of our parks, and it seems we can never provide enough parking. Even when we have large parking lots, it seems that there's still not enough. But parking expansion was not a big item on the management plan. I think we felt that with the site constraints, the steepness of the mountain, there would be too big of an impact if we increase some of the parking. Some of the recent improvements we've done is on North Road, at the pipeline trailhead. We, together with engineering, we were able to do some road shoulder parking improvements, so we provided some additional parking there. But when parking saturation happens, a lot of people, they just migrate to their residential areas, and then some people have learned just to cycle to the park. They find it easier to cycle or walk from their homes.
And is that being encouraged?
It's, I guess, not publicly encouraged, but I guess by not developing parking areas, we're making a statement, right? We did create the large 250 stall parking lot at the Bike Skills facility, where the former Target Range site was.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we haven't created any kind of additional parking. Mm-hmm.
You've talked a little bit about the resources that you've put into building new and maintaining old trails through time.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that you actually use volunteers to help maintain the trails.
We do use volunteers for some projects.
Okay.
Through the Parks Commission and then through our union, we've been able to negotiate with the Burnaby Mountain Bike Club for volunteer trail days every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of let the club choose some of the trails that are important to them,
mm-hmm.
That they'd like to work on, and these are quite specialized little projects that the club works on also, so that would be work that our Burnaby trail crews would typically not do, such as rock armoring work or specialty woodwork. So we've worked with the Burnaby Mountain Bike Club for close to 10 years now.
Oh.
And we've really had a great working relationship with them. They've done some fantastic work. They've become real trail stewards also.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Have you been on some of those work days?
I've been on almost all of them.
Oh, is that right? Can you tell me some stories about how those work?
We typically start early in the morning. Start at 8 or 8:30, and we have a sign-in session where volunteers sign in, and then we just have a safety talk and have a review discussion about the goals for the day, and then the volunteers, they go into the area where we're going to do some trail improvements. And then often lunch will be pizza and some good laughs. And, you know, it's lighthearted trail days where, you know, there's lots of camaraderie, which is really neat to see. And one component that we occasionally use on the trail days also is to do some planting of native shrubs. So we'll incorporate that into some of the projects where if there's a disturbed area, like an area that needs some TLC, we'll order some additional plant material for there, and the club's always happy to help out with planting also.
Yeah. I understand that there is some unsupervised trail help. Mm-hmm. I noticed on the Burnaby Mountain Biking Association website that there is kind of an ongoing thread about people, bikers going in and improving the trails.
Yeah. It's something we don't encourage, but really it's something is very difficult to police. So
yes.
Yeah. Usually they're very good things, but sometimes we do get people with different ideas that start creating trails in undisturbed areas, which we really try to discourage. Yeah, and we usually close them down when we find that. But it's something that the Burning Mountain Bike Club is definitely not involved in. They were quite a great stewardship group. Yeah.
So the association itself kind of helps to educate its members.
Yeah. Then they do it to the best of their ability.
So how would you go about discouraging that kind of help?
I guess through signage education. We often install, signs saying once we find a bandit trail, we call them. Once we find a bandit trail, we will close it off with natural woody debris, and okay. Sometimes we'll replant the disturbed areas, and sometimes if need be we'll post a large sign that explains to the public that they're in an environmentally sensitive area, mm-hmm. and that you just explain that the importance of the area and the consequences of what damage does and how long it takes for nature to repair itself. So we try to use the educational component.
And if that doesn't work, are there further consequences?
We post on the signs, we also post the bylaw fines. I think it's up to $1,000 for people who damage or destroy the natural habitat.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think when the management plan was created, there was some discussion about actually having bikers denied access if they didn't mm-hmm. improve their behavior. Has that been an issue at all?
It hasn't been an issue, no.
Oh, that's great.
No, we've worked together quite nicely. Yeah.